everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present, and future of all things business in esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills, the founder of Looking for a Group, and today we are joined by Weldon Green, the well-known performance coach from the likes of TSM and G2, and now the co-founder of LeagueCoaching.gg with Dojo Madness. The main topic...
Hello, everybody.
Hey. The main topic for this podcast will be something slightly different. We're going to be focusing on the path past pro for players and support staff alike, as I feel that many of the pro players and the back office staff might be exceptionally focused on the short-term window of their time in the spotlight, and Weldon has been doing some fantastic work over the last few years to build himself as a brand and also build a service proposition which will guarantee his influence and activity in the space for years to come.
Well, I haven't heard it put that way, but it's quite accurate, actually.
Yeah. I mean,
it was certainly my attention.
That's a general idea. So, Weldon, thank you very much for coming on. It must be an absolutely mad time for you at the moment with everything with a G2 and actually getting this proposition off the ground.
Yeah, my pleasure. And it certainly is a crazy week. I think that in end of September, we're launching our beta. So we're almost to end-to-end user testing for the kind of like service product that we're bouncing off of League Coaching within Dojo Madness. I'm sure we'll explain a lot of those terms later on in the podcast. Yeah. But and then, of course, G2, we just qualified for Worlds and won the split. And so I'm leaving in 3 days to go to Korea for boot camping. And... yeah, it's spending a well-needed week and a half at home with the kids and with my family to kind of build up, charge the batteries before, I think it'll be 4 weeks minimum. I'll be 2 weeks in Korea and 2 weeks in China. And that is if we go out in groups, but obviously we're not going to, so it's probably longer than 4 weeks.
Absolutely.
Hopefully.
So from your perspective, going into this last 4 weeks before Worlds, what are main focus for you in terms of doing the last minute tweaks and what ideas are you trying to have the players actually keep in mind?
So the nice thing about boot camping before a major event is that everybody gets really serious. So it's easier to keep people focused on training hard and really thinking about putting in the extra effort necessary to kind of round out a lot of rough edges.
Sure.
in teams play, and to keep them disciplined, I would say. Disciplined in terms of training correct set plays versus, you know, kind of going wild in scrims, which is a unique G2/Chinese problem from my experience. Not G2, sorry. A unique EU/Chinese problem. European and Chinese scrims tend to be very skirmish-based, lots of skirmishes. But more importantly, I think it's to rein in teams from panicking. I think that there's a lot of experimentation and there's a lot of like fear that the team won't read the meta right, and you have basically 2 weeks of training all the teams in the boot camps before everybody goes on stage in best of ones. So everybody's like screaming through champion discussions and team meetings and draft meetings as fast as possible to try to figure out what in the world it is that is going to be the meta of the tournament. And the first kind of teams to figure that out are going to be the ones that have huge advantages in the group stages and the best of ones. Because obviously you have one game to drop for experimentation in a best of five. But if you drop a best of one because you missed a simple draft tweak that the other team picked up on, then you lose before you even play, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, that's the high risk, high reward exchange that you have in a game that changes so frequently, such as League. We've kind of jumped the gun slightly. So let's take a step back. Sure. and actually understand a little bit more about your story. How did you get to be working in esports, and what major milestones brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, I think it started when I was five and I started doing sport. So I started swimming and I kept that up for the next 21 years with an odd break here and there, and ended at the elite level in college. But In reality, it started in around 2007 when I decided that I really liked the teaching aspect of teaching. So I really liked working with youth and helping them develop, but I hated the medium. I didn't particularly like teaching English. I mean, it was fine. It just wasn't my medium of choice. And I thought sport would be a lot more fun way to develop youth and to teach them the kind of things that I like to teach in a classroom setting. So, you know, transferable life skills. Sure. And so I focused on sport. I focused on youth development through sport, and I focused on becoming a professional swim coach, which I achieved. And then I went back to school for sport and exercise psychology for a number of reasons, which if we went into would totally divert the podcast. So I'll skip over all of that and just say that in 2012, when I'd graduated with my degree, I had a baby. And, well, I didn't have a baby, but a baby was produced within my household, gestated, not by me. And and then I couldn't play StarCraft at night anymore. So I'm sitting there, you know, with a baby in my arms, rocking into sleep, and I'm looking at the StarCraft, you know, queue, and I'm like, huh, this is going to be difficult because I only have one hand at a time, you know, to manipulate this game. So I discovered you could watch StarCraft. Then I discovered you could watch StarCraft professional players, and I discovered eSport. And then I saw my first eSport match where a pro broke down on stage in front of 10,000 people, you know, sobbing after he choked in the finals and lost, you know, in three straight games. And I was like, oh, this guy needs a coach. He needs somebody like me who's coaching the swim team, you know, to be coaching his team or to be coaching him.
Sure.
And so that's when I started my brand, I guess you would say, which didn't really have a name for about 2 years, actually, as I was kind of kicking it off. And so around 2014, I started to gain traction. And my, I guess you could say it went from ambition to ambition. So I started out saying, okay, I want to work in esport as a performance coach, build exactly what we were taught how to build in my master's, but at the, you know, in the esport level instead of in the traditional sport model. And then that transformed into, well, I'm actually pretty good at this game. After I started getting into teams, I was like, oh, these coaches are not really that good. I mean, it's a bunch of like 18 to 20 year olds, or even not pro players, you know, but a bunch of 18 to 20 year olds who don't know the first thing about coaching or game theory or MOBAs. They just kind of like do results based analysis, you know, on a scrimmage result and then theorize a bunch of random stuff that's not really a fundamental, you know, first principle of the game in a way. And so I was like, okay, well, I want to get more focused on League of Legends. I dropped Counter-Strike and I dropped kind of the other games I was looking into and just focused on League. And I wanted to become a really good League coach. And then I just really enjoyed branding. I just really enjoyed the branding aspect of and marketing aspect of business, of building my brand. And I, at the same time, was trying to launch a coach training kind of school, I guess, because my ambition, of course, is not to become a well-known coach. My ambition is to become a well-known coach and then use that brand equity to create a coaching school that will train amateur coaches around the world so that we can have youth development through esport in the future.
Absolutely.
And that would involve creating the school. So I was looking around at creating the school, and I ended up in talks with Dojo about a startup, and then we started with a commercial endeavor.
We've already touched on the fact that you got stuck in through the talent management piece and started to look further towards the future as, you know, how can I impact this industry and actually build my own a personal legacy alongside that. Could you just break down a psychological process that is required to reorientate yourself from a talent-facing role into one that's more business-focused? What were the new hurdles that you had to overcome, and what bits of experience from working with pros was super helpful when building up these business models?
So for me, this transition took place over 2 years, 2012 to 2014 or 15, maybe 2.5 years, 3 years. And it involved me thinking, you know, first of all, like, one foot in front of the other, like very small term, like, okay, I'm going to find a way to, you know, do this job in esport because it doesn't exist. You know, it's not like you can apply to be a performance psychology consultant or trainer for a team. And So I thought, okay, well, I need to build a practice. Okay, well, so I started looking into how to productize services and learn all the basic skills of, like, you know, running a business online and marketing and branding and sales and finance. And once I had kind of the basics underway, I started to uncover a lot of podcasts and really big thinking about how it is that you, like, I want to say level up your scope or your vision. And I had ideas like, oh, it should be that, you know, this is the case, or it should be that this is the case, or it should be that, you know, esport is useful for kids and not a waste of time. But I never thought along the lines of I should make it so that. And I think that at one point I had there's a famous scene in a movie with The Rock when he's sitting in the car and he's talking about his dad. Not his real dad, obviously, his actor, you know, his role's dad, was working in a factory for 30 years and then got in to talk to the manager for the very first time in his whole life and realized he was just another dude just like him. Just happened to be a manager, not any special thing about him. And he realized he wasted like 30 years, like thinking that he was not the right kind of person to do that or whatever. So, yeah, just like getting in touch kind of through podcast form, through video form, through content form with these people who were thinking on big scale and big scope and seeing how the internet could allow you to reach like global scale in a very relatively short like period of time with almost no bar of entry. Sure. I was like, oh, okay. So I went through a series of psychological processes thinking like, okay, just expanding my mind in terms of goals. Like, so you have to ask a question like, what if you, I guess the best one to do that's generic, maybe we can take the audience through it, would be something like this. Say you want to make $100 million, or you want to be worth $100 million, or you want to make a business whose revenue is $100 million in 10 years. So first of all, what kinds of like emotional reactions does that rise in you? Like, do you feel insufficient? Do you feel disgust? Do you feel like, who is that person? Do you feel like, oh, of course they're not talking about me. Like, what the heck? And then you have to overcome all of those kind of weird like reactions that you have that are programmed in you from your parents, from your siblings, from your society, from like just set it out as like just a thing, like a thought experiment, right? Take away all the emotional content from it. Be like, okay, let's say I want to do this thing. Break it down. So that means in 5 years you need to have how much money you need to be pulling in, how much revenue through your business. That means in 1 year, you know, you need to be pulling in how much revenue through your business. That means in 12 weeks, you need to be pulling in how much revenue from through your business. That means in a month, you need to be pulling. So what are the steps that you're doing? So then you think like, well, right now I'm editing a graphic for a tweet. So that kind of work is very valuable and very useful, but it's not the kind of work that will get me to $100 million in revenue in 10 years. So what is the kind of work I need to be doing today that in 4 weeks piled up onto 12 weeks, piled up onto 1 year, piled up onto 5 years, piled up onto 10 years, will get me to that point. And you realize it's just work. It's just all the same. You know, you take your hours and you put them towards a task. It just happens that some people choose to put them toward one task and some people choose to put them toward another task. And if you look at the end road of both tasks, one person has created a lot of graphics for Twitter and another person has created a $100 million revenue business. That's the long and the short of it. So I started going through a lot of
the major struggles that I have actually, like, through looking at the foundation of what it is that we do and been actually taking a look at kind of what is the true value for someone that is a hub for talent and information in an emerging market. And I thought, okay, so the podcast is a great way to promote transparency and get our message out there and actually help the industry to be more collaborative in terms of its thought leadership, and then doing other bits and bobs that we've got planned for next year. And it's so very easy to get distracted from almost being up in the clouds with where you want this to be and actually stepping a few steps away from what is the core fundamental engine that actually fuels the rest of these ideas. I think it's great to have strong long-term ideas of where you want to be and reduce it back from there. But I also feel like the esports industry is so fluid and changes every 6 to 12 months or even more, that setting yourself short-term goals where you can actually re-pivot at each angle is also really important.
Yeah, it depends on how good you are at predicting exactly how valuable the thing that you want to eventually do is. And I happen to be very good at prediction, so I'm quite certain that the coaching industry is going to exist.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
I need a license. So that's pretty certain.
It's one of the when you come to like the main products that will always be around, anything that is competitive in this arena, which is performance optimization, you know, that is a easy bet to make.
So given those thought experiments, I realized that first of all, there's two things that are important. One is to plan that, you know, any business that I make is not going to be financially viable for like 5 to 7 years if I mapped out the economics of the space, because we're talking about needing to have a full amateur scene developed and then the coaches for those amateur scenes in a place to coach them, which means a lot of times it's going to be parents of the current esport generation, like coaching their kids' esport teams. And then they're going to want to go for, basically additional qualifications in order to improve their skill set to coach these amateur teams. And so that kind of like helped me get a scope on how long I need to build this up and what sort of like intermediate products I should build or services or companies I should focus on building on my way to this point. And then secondly, I realized that essentially fame is the largest like leverage point that you have in terms of the ability to get things happening. I mean, if you look at what, is it Kylie Jenner?
I'm not sure. I try to hide away from everything to do with celebrity culture as much as possible.
And Jenner have done with their makeup brands and the fact that they were able to churn out, tens and hundreds of million dollars of revenue in business just from the utilization of social media networking and music. You can see, I mean, look what Rick Fox has been able to do in the Riot Games esport, ecosystem with just, the leverage that he created off of the fame that he created. So I think that to me was like, okay, so I should pursue high value performance that creates a brand, and I should leverage that brand in the path of creating this kind of like other valuable enterprise, because I can't really do that now, but I can do this now. And so it's kind of like groundwork essentially.
That actually brings us quite nicely on to one of the next pieces that I wanted to ask you about. We're in a stage where there is ever increasing amounts of investment and attention into the esports industry, what I would call as a land grab, as the core products and titles and infrastructures are there, but there are a huge amount of tech-based or wider service providers that are looking to actually get stuck in. Where do you see the role of AI-based solutions, especially when they're targeted towards the B2C market?
So I think that AI, we're really talking about machine learning. Obviously, we don't have consciousness yet.
No.
We're basically talking about machine learning algorithms that then kind of build these really complex decision matrices or neural nets and are able to use, optical character recognition and pattern recognition to kind of make decisions. So I guess the best example would be the OpenAI implementation in Dota 2, which required...
I absolutely loved watching that. It was so great.
Which required collaboration with the publisher to kind of get access, into the game itself, so that they could program the bot to be able to issue commands, stuff like that, to itself for playing. And then we have at the other end of the spectrum things like, pattern recognition tools set atop deep data that is constantly being refreshed. So instead of spending a lot of time building up a certain kind of skill set, like playing a game, we would have something like, an entire day's worth of data snapshot for, every single esport game or instance played on the ladder, in the entire world. And then what can we derive from that, instantly, that we would never be able to do, on a human scale in order to react faster, whether that be, from strategic or meta game or like even marketing ideas, like, oh, all of a sudden skins are selling, in this one segment. So I think that machine learning is going to largely be segmented between, these B2B products where you offer insights the same as any other company,
sure,
onto a new consumer base. So I think that as companies realize that esport gamers behave differently on the consumer level from gamer gamers, there's going to be like a lot of kind of like insight driven segmentation there for B2B. For the sale of ads, I think like what Riot Games should do with their streaming product that they're building should bring their ad product in house and then be able to segment, you know, user behavior specifically for the advertiser, like in a very delicate way, and allow the advertiser to like do some really cool. So I think that they're, you know, this very like B2B focused kind of like high level stuff. And then I think as far as the consumer goes, you know, you have, when you used to go to GameSpot or you used to go to this like, you know, game store and you'd buy like a guide to Zelda that would show you, you know, a walkthrough.
Yeah.
That's essentially the thing that is being sold in app form. You know, it's like a walkthrough, except that instead of being a walkthrough of a static game, it's going to be, oh, here's a snapshot of, you know, the last 1,000 games played by you and your opponent and all of your opponents and all of your teammates, and this is the exact optimal set of decisions that you should make this game to increase your chance of winning. And sure. As far as motor learning, machine learning and coaching, like direct coaching. So we're talking about seeing you do something and then offering you advice. I think that it's really tough right now to understand the human psyche for any sort of learning system. So we've seen that we can get pretty nitty gritty in terms of memorization of facts. We know that there's like a remembering curve, and we can present a factoid on a digital card that learns when it will be forgotten and then places itself at the optimal place to get reviewed so that you remember a factoid. But when you're talking about learning behaviors, we have this like trans-theoretical model of behavior change, which tries to amalgamate all of our habits of behavior change over a lot of the different theories that are out there. And it kind of goes through these ideas of, okay, you have pre-contemplation where you don't even know you have a problem, contemplation where you start to think about, okay, I see this as a problem, and then preparation where you're deciding, okay, I'm going to change this. Then you have the actual, you know, implementation of your plan, and then you have, you know, the maintenance phase where you're trying to maintain that, and then the cleanup phase where you're trying to like, oh, you fell out of your new habit and you're trying to pick it back up or whatever. So identifying where every single person is in this kind of like behavioral path of change, personal change, is something that is not really being looked at. And instead, companies are offering a product that, or like an AI bot or whatever, that is exactly suited to a person who is right at the stage of wanting to implement change and doing it right there, which isn't really coaching. Coaching is like bringing people to that stage and helping them afterwards in maintenance. The actual learning point, you can use these kind of tools and it's great, but going from, you know, stage zero all the way up to stage four, where you're thinking, okay, now I'm actually going to do something about it. So going from not, you know, thinking, not even knowing that you're overweight and unhealthy, to thinking that, okay, I'm overweight and unhealthy, to actually being like, okay, I'm going to sign up for a gym, and then actually going up to sign up for a gym and a trainer. Then you go to the trainer session. Like, that's where our AI coaching is right now, in pretty much every industry. And it's liable to stay there until people start thinking in esport, how do we get at these people who are like, you know, earlier down in their decision?
Yeah, I suppose it must be quite difficult to quantify, you know, at what point people tilt, or even like what that means for each person. I mean, it's a very specific example. I probably excessively ruminate on personal development and, you know, and thought processes and through going through processes like cognitive behavioral therapy and that sort of thing. It's about being able to actually take yourself out of the equation and analyze the workflow of how a thought can become more heart-seated inside you and can actually take on its own life and actually almost become a self-fulfilling prophecy, unless you actually rewire how you approach things and either give yourself a break by just stepping away or removing yourself from a situation where it which is toxic, or actually being able to, like you said, go further down the chain and actually early identify what might be an issue.
Yeah, that brings us back to the full circle to the esports land grab idea. So like, what do we think of all these VCs in the esports land grab that's going on? Sure. Is it like a helicopter with a rising ladder and everybody's going to try to grab onto one rung and shove other people off? Or is it like an iceberg that's like rising out of the sea and you know, there's just going to be more and more landmass revealed and everybody's going to be like, holy cow, there's so much room here to play on. And I mean, I think the answer is absolutely towards the iceberg. Because you have the actual gaming culture, which has spread massively kind of throughout the world, even in the like most audacious form in the terms of like mobile games, which target both genders pretty well, you know? So, I mean, you would call hardcore games, basically leisure games created by men for men, where you have these like really closed communities of people who are like, if you can't spend 9 hours of leisure a day on this and appreciate it for being a leisure game, then it's, you know, it's not worth you being called a gamer. And then you have the game companies who are like, okay, but I'm making $3 billion, you know, market cap by making a mobile game that you put down after 10 seconds of playing and pick up again, you know, 10 seconds later, which fits much more into like adults' lives essentially. And now these are being kind of like turned into esports. So you look at Clash Royale, I think it is, the Supercell game that is now like a fast growing title. I think it's almost bigger than Heroes of the Storm in terms of like esport size. And I mean, it's one of those like, well, has mass market appeal in the similar way that League of Legends has mass market appeal. But as you go mobile, these things are scaling up even more, like just like much larger. So I think that esports are going to go, quote unquote, I guess you could say like the thing that would make sense to your listeners would be casual, but I would rather say they're going to go mobile friendly and they're going to go into games where people just want to cheer for other people. So they're going to tap into essentially the community aspect. Each publisher is going to try to build their own community around the esport fans in their consumer base. So every single game is going to say, okay, I have a consumer base, and within it there is a massive group segment of people who would cheer for a sport, you know, who would get behind kind of like the idea of watching casted content. And they're going to start creating content for them and try to create you know, a way to do this really organic, exciting, interesting style of marketing of their own game to their own consumer base. It's a really great way to transfer your consumer base, I think, even to the next game that you make, because you have such a strong connection with them. So I think that every single game publisher is going to need to focus on the people who play their game who happen to be esporters as well, even if they don't know it yet.
It's an absolutely fascinating time to be in the space. And I think that from the title perspective, there's going to be so much innovation around, you know, what will actually be the leading esports titles and how will those fans engage. You know, just looking at PUBG as well, I think it hit 10 million purchases last week or earlier this week. And that is a completely different form of media, which is so clippable and is...
Yeah, I mean, that's almost like Overwatch level growth.
Yeah.
You know, when it go, I think they ballooned to like 30 million in the next few weeks or something.
I would say that the longevity of actually being a enjoyable spectator experience that PUBG is going to be doing a lot better than Overwatch will in the future. That's maybe a unpopular opinion, but I also think it's one of the main reservations behind the Overwatch League as a whole, aside from it basically hoovering hundreds of millions of dollars out of the investor pockets that are already interested in the industry as a whole. It's so super fascinating times. We're starting to fight against the clock, so I want to just cover one more area before we drop into our recurring segment. Actually, let's step away from the business side for 1 second, because I'm sure a lot of people have come here to listen to understand a little bit more about the psychology behind the pros themselves. Let's take a top-down view of your experience over the last 2 years. Do you believe that the collective mindset of esports players has changed in terms of their appreciation for their the time in the spotlight or the diligence that they show towards their craft? Or do you feel like that's a far too massive of a sweeping statement to make about the entire industry?
I think if we're talking about collective, it's definitely true. 100%.
Sure. What examples would you use to...
Well, I think that it's especially prevalent if you look at how seriously like lower tier players are taking opportunities to do PR and build brand and market themselves. Sure. But my experience in the one-on-one setting working with kind of like the top tier pros is that they are quite focused on, they kind of like have known it all along in a way. And of course the knowledge, the self-knowledge of how serious they are taking it and how much the market is rewarding that seriousness is growing. So they're realizing it like, kind of like, oh yeah, this is actually very appreciated and it is elite craft and is the, but all along they've been kind of doing it without knowing it and feeling guilty when their parents and their friends are like, I can't believe you're so serious about this, you know? So I think that to reach like a 0.0002% performance level, you kind of are wired up that way to begin with. And so the fact that society rejected that at first and is now accepting it is kind of a nice relaxing thing for them. Cause like at first they were fighting against the grain and now they're kind of like, let loose. But then I think that they're being really good examples for everybody who's like below, you know, top, you know, 20, who is, you know, who's realizing, okay, we need to ourselves do the actions that will help me build a sustainable career, even though I'm not on the best team. Like I should be able to lose and still have a career. And that involves, you know, being good at PR, and now a lot of the game companies are doing media training for the players, which is really helping them. And all of them kind of recognize the importance of streaming. I think maybe because esport was born out of streaming in the first place, but not the least because, you know, owners and sponsors are pushing it as a main way of connecting with the user base, or the fan base, you could say. So I think that collectively you're absolutely right. There's been a massive shift as society has said, you know, this is valuable and players have realized this is a skill set I want to have because look, it gives me so much more leverage. Let's take a really good example. Golden Glue, who after one of his splits had a very kind of bad narrative when he went off to Korea to train and decided he wanted to personally change that and streamed like on a really consistent basis every single day, displayed what he was doing, made a lot of content around his journey and created a rabid fan base of, you know, thousands and thousands of fans that were very excited to kind of like see his seriousness towards this and his process. And then the public narrative shifted through like his grinding of that kind of like PR process and that fan building process. And so when you have somebody who like understands the system as deeply as he did and really taking that kind of tactile approach to creating their own destiny, it serves as a really good example to everybody else to say like, oh yeah, you can kind of like focus on this brand building thing even as a pro at whatever level of success you are, and you can create out of it the life that you desire. Not even if you're bad, because like eventually you're just going to become like a personality at that stage. But like even if your team never wins anything, I would say.
Sure. Yeah, I was speaking to the guys from Twitch while I was at Gamescom, and they were saying that if you pretty much have 300 regular viewers on your Twitch channel, you can build that into a business that, you know, might not make you millions, but will be a lifestyle business. So there's a huge amount of impact for organizations that actually enable the pro players to.
I think people don't realize that if you can build a 1,000-person fan group and with concurrent viewership close to 300 to 500, that you're done. You're set. That can be your job.
Yeah. So that's, I don't know. It's super exciting to see esports pros like Shroud actually step away and Seagull in Overwatch to focus on exclusively streaming, because, you know, not just because they can make the most amount of cash from that, but when the competitive flame starts to waver, you know, they have that path past pro, right? as we keep going.
I would like to see it when the competitive flame starts to waver, but I hate to see it beforehand, because that just means that the players are not being rewarded enough for their skill level. For what they're accomplishing, which we had a problem with in, in League of Legends for a little bit, and anytime you have a kind of like game company supported pay structure, then you know things can get really static really fast when it's not like directly monetized through the viewership to the to the player. But that is what it is, and what will happen is people will step away, and then salaries will go up, and then they'll come back if they're good enough still. And yeah, but it's nice to see, you know, if their skills suffer and they aren't actually good anymore and they want to step away, and they're, you know, they're flame wavers, that they have a, you know, really strong media brand that they can start doing.
Yeah, and I suppose if they would be looking to step back into the scene, they always have the strategic option of teaching, actually learning more about themselves through that medium. We see that in mixed martial arts and boxing all the time, with people that step away. They think, probably because there's a lot more long-term damage on themselves, that they might stop. Well, they probably should stop actually getting punched in the head. But when they go back to training and building their own gyms, that they just learn a lot more, and they actually become a stronger martial artist through that. Maybe if the machine that actually runs the warrior is starting to break down. We have completely smashed through the target time, and I feel my producer's eyes burning into the back of my head. So let's just close off with our soon to be recurring item, which is really imaginatively named Dream Job.
Dream Job.
It needs a new name for sure. But we're asking all the guests that come on to take a step away from the business angle, and if they could be a pro or pro-facing role in any game, past, present, future, or fantasy in esports, what would it be? You can't say coach.
Wait, so I name the player that I would be right now, or I name the position I would be, the job?
The position, you could be a pro player, so...
Oh, heck, I'd be a pro player in an instant. Are you kidding? It's the greatest job in the world right now.
But in what game?
Oh, League of Legends.
It could be past or present, so
So I'm very much about the flavor of the month. So I think that people who jump on the future because they're afraid of not getting a land grab...
Yeah,
they should aim for the land grab and the up and coming thing. At the same time, they focus really on what is the largest thing right now. So like, yes,
sure,
you should be land grabbing in PUBG because it's growing phenomenally, but it doesn't have 110 million concurrent user base, and it doesn't have 45 million people watching the finals. So League of Legends, 100% right now, is the like creme de la creme, crown jewel of esport. And if you want to be a pro player in any sport, you want to be in League of Legends, bar none, and you want to be the best. And it will give you the largest leverage to take it anywhere you want after that. Yeah.
And what role do you play?
Oh, I would play mid for sure.
You play a mid?
Yeah.
What's your favorite champion?
Right now?
No, it can be any. It doesn't have to be what's now.
But he sucks right now. So
yeah,
Zed's not that great either. I don't know.
No.
I guess Lucian would have to be the closest thing to we have to like a playmaking champion.
Yeah. You don't have to be meta. You know, I used to play Galio.
I guess Syndra.
Support like before the remake.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm a bard main.
Yeah, he had his shield. That was pretty OP.
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous.
Max's shield.
Right, well done. It's been absolutely fantastic to have you on. I look forward to saying hi and maybe go for a beer at the next event that we're at. Thank you very much for everyone for tuning in to the Esports Roundtable podcast. Please make sure to send over all of your feedback on iTunes or to our Facebook and Twitter page, which is LFG Esports HR. Well done. Thank you very much for coming on, and all the best with Worlds.